I haven't done a three-person edit in quite a while, though.
Oh, threesomes or something, I guess. Whatever. You've had a threesome, Josh?
Have I?
Yeah.
Okay. And then we talk about music.
We talk about music on this podcast.
Welcome back to Bad Bandmates. We got a special one for you today. We have Lambo.
Hi.
Lambo's back.
Hi.
After we released the Nirvana Nevermind episode, Lambo texted us and let us know that he is quite knowledgeable in the Nirvana department. Is that accurate?
A little bit. I mean, I can't say I know a whole lot, but yeah, Nirvana's been one of my favorite bands forever. It was one of the first bands that I ever was really introduced to. Obviously, when like Smells Like Teen Spirit was on MTV, I was all over. I was watching TV all day, pretty much, being a kid. And yeah, Smells Like Teen Spirit was really cool. The video was really cool, you know.
The school video.
Yeah, the school gym and shit. And it was about, because my brother was really into that kind of music too. Like, he got me into Metallica way back in the day, and Nirvana, Nevermind was definitely a C, you know, one of the CDs that I stole from him real early. But yeah, and it was in probably in high school is when I actually learned about Bleach. Because, you know, for the longest time, you know, we didn't have the internet back then, we couldn't just look everything up. You know, you actually had to go find a resource to get more information on something. But yeah, I found Nirvana Bleach, and that was their first real studio album. And I just thought it's super raw. I'm sure you guys could tell a huge difference, like, as soon as you heard it, like that first track that comes on, you're like, wow, this brings me back to the days of old school recording. And you know, this is
definitely.
it reminds me of kind of like Tool's Opiate, where it's, you know, their first CD, that was kind of their same thing, you know, wasn't very popular, but it was had fucking killer songs, and everything was just so raw.
Yeah. So as we've said, now we're talking about Bleach today by Nirvana. Kind of to me, it was always the like the runt of the litter, you know. I mean, even between Nevermind and In Utero, it's like those are like highly praised, I guess. Of course, Nevermind is, but even In Utero, I think, has like some, you know, top tier tracks and all that stuff. But you don't hear about Bleach, at least not as much as I think maybe you should. And I mean, we'll discuss our thoughts and stuff of that nature, of course. I'm mostly interested to hear Josh talk about this, because basically, like he said, Lambo texted us, and then he kind of came to find out that neither one of us had ever listened to Bleach, you know, in its entirety.
Yeah,
that's true. I mean, one song. I had one song.
Yeah, about a girl. Guarantee. Yeah,
of
exactly.
Course.
Yep.
And we'll get to that song, dude.
I know what you're going to talk about.
Oh yeah,
and
you definitely know.
I made Casey watch it on the couch because she'd never seen it, and 12 seconds in, she goes, shut this off.
Shut it off, dude.
And I was like, dude, you have to watch the whole thing. It gets better.
What would you watch?
We'll talk about it.
Okay.
Okay. So I think let's dive right in. We've kind of set up the album. This is, as Lambo said, the first studio album by Nirvana, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you talked about the days of like old recordings and stuff like that. Yeah, very local band, record in a garage feel, you know?
Yep.
Yeah. Very.
Yep.
Absolutely. And we got to mention at the top, Dave Grohl is not on this one.
Nope.
Man, can you tell?
Yeah. Well,
not necessarily bad drumming, but
no. Yeah. I didn't mean that to sound like a diss, but you can tell that it's not Dave Grohl because there's shit that Dave Grohl would never do.
A lot
of the time.
Yeah, like double bass. You never heard Nirvana play any double bass after this album.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's, you know what? I'm just going to say this in the beginning. And that's why I think that this album isn't talked about much by people, because Nirvana is the staple of grunge, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
This isn't a grunge album, I wouldn't say. Like, this isn't the Nirvana style that people bit into, you know?
Right.
They got that on Nevermind. This is a fucking... This is like, you get hints of it,
right?
But like little tastes. But this is not what I think people think of when they think of grunge. So that's probably why it doesn't get as much airtime as it would. I think About a Girl is the only song that really falls into that Nirvana-esque vibe that people dig on.
Yeah,
you know, I don't know if you guys can catch this wave of comparison, but and not for any like thing that you would. Let me just say it. I was like thinking a lot between, you know, Bleach and then Nevermind. And then it almost was like the same sort of kind of crazy difference between like Weezer's Pinkerton and Blue Album. Like, I don't know if you've like because they're the same band and kind of the same sort of like, I think Pinkerton and Blue are back to back. But it's just such a different, like, you can tell the quality difference, and you can tell like the production, and you can tell like the, just the, I don't know if I would call it maturity, but like just the difference in those things. So,
$3 bill to significant other.
Yeah.
Yes, same, exactly. Same thing. And, yeah, it's definitely local band going to like, okay, now we gotta budget a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, so yep. Anyways, yeah, go ahead.
I was just reading up on the, you know, as much as you'd want to go off of Wikipedia information, I mean, it's
yeah
kind of here or there, but I mean, yeah, they said like to record this album cost like $600 or just over $600.
That's,
you know?
Yeah,
and you know, I read that too, and it's really good for $600.
Yeah, I mean, not
it's
bad.
It's not good for $5 million, but for $600,
yeah.
Woo!
And this was, you know, this is way before any digital recording. This was still real to real shit. You know, editing was a whole different thing back then.
Yeah, you have to fucking cut
click
the tape
and drag.
And move
yeah,
it over.
Like yeah, physically cut a tape and use a machine to splice it together. And you got to know your shit, otherwise it's just it never sounded right. And,
right.
I've heard some cuts that are not right, and you can tell.
Oh, yeah.
You can definitely tell.
Yeah, you can definitely tell.
Yeah.
So, there's a whole art form that's kind of been lost in different recording medium, for sure.
Definitely, which is something that I kind of talk about a lot of the time, like when it comes to the albums that I bring Josh, like I'm always like, I like the kind of raw sound of it. I like that it's not necessarily perfect, you know, it's...
Yep.
It's exactly what it needs to be. And I think that this album is kind of exactly what it needed to be. And that's kind of it. So we can start right in on the first track if you want.
Blue.
Yeah.
But it's B-L-E-W.
Right. Yeah.
Blue. And I just actually looked at lyrics today for the first time, because I never actually, except for maybe Floyd the Barber, because... In high school, I did a report on Floyd the Barber.
Sure.
But yeah, I was actually just kind of listening along and watching some of the lyrics. And I mean, super stupid, simple lyrics. I mean, there isn't a whole lot of depth to it. And, you know, even according to some of the writings, they're like, yeah, it's nothing spectacular, especially for what Kurt Cobain could write later. Like, you know,
exactly.
Nevermind and Inurdo. I mean, those are unbelievable songs. And in this one, he even kind of admits, like, yeah, just kind of, you know, most of them are written like a day or two before we even recorded it. So it was just kind of,
you can tell.
Yeah.
You can definitely tell.
Yeah. Like many, many repeating lines I mean, there's a lot of repetition in his lyrics. It's just kind of simple. There's not a whole lot of meaning or depth to anything. But I think it fits when kind of with the music and just kind of what they were kind of, you know, trying to pull off at the time.
Right. Yeah. They were definitely just throwing, like, I mean, you mentioned, you know, the simplicity of the lyrics and even just the simplicity of, like, some of the riffs that he was pulling off on the guitar and just the definite cheap production on the drums. I mean, the drum sounds fairly cheap, you know?
Yep.
Like, it's throughout the album. And it's not necessarily, again, it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just, you aren't getting Nevermind here, you know, that you can't go into this thinking you're getting that sort of quality, and stuff like that. And even to touch on the not Dave Grohl as the drummer, yeah, I mean, it seems like this is in a more live setting versus like record the drums, then the guitar, then the bass and, you know, stuff like that. It felt more live sounding, this album. And you notice that immediately right off the bat with this song. Even some of the tempos sometimes are like a little bit, they speed up a little bit or they, mm-hmm. you know, they, you know, most of the time it's speed up versus drag, but, yeah, you notice those little things happening and again, it's not bad. Definitely a local band feel. And with this first track, I mean, the bass riff to start things off. Love that, you know that. I mean, it's just chunky and just such, it's got such a great, like, almost, you know, punk sort of tone to it, you know? You're blowing it out cheap amps and just, like, cranking some knobs that you don't really necessarily know.
Yeah.
Like, you're just like, yeah, that sounds good, keep it at that, you know?
That's so. One of my notes is this whole album. Because I took notes song by song, but it really didn't end up being song by song. But it sounds like Kurt Cobain didn't really know what the fuck he was doing with his pedals or anything. He was just like, I'll try that one!
Yeah.
And then just turned it up and just kind of rolled with it.
Yeah.
But yep. It's a cool vibe, like Nate said. It does sound like they just recorded it live in a garage, did one take, and were like, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And then moved on.
Yeah.
Okay. Which is cool. I appreciate that.
I will say this though, and again, you can't help but like compare to like Nevermind and stuff and In Utero, but like the guitar solos on this record, and you notice it right off the bat with this one, I feel like are actually on like kind of a higher level, like in complexity than Nevermind and Utero. Like, where a lot of the times for those albums, Kurt was just, like, playing the melody of the song, but, like, on, like, in a different, like, guitar setting or solo or whatever, so it sounded actually like a guitar solo. Whereas, like, with this album, it actually seemed like he was trying to write solos, you know?
Yeah.
And I mean, I've seen that there's maybe some other people playing other music on this album. I don't know if it was all Kurt or if he had other people writing with him or something
actually,
like that.
The dude that actually ended up paying for the recording acted as a second guitarist. He played some second guitar parts in this album.
Oh.
And I that's kind of that. Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because it's like, not that Kurt couldn't do something like that. But like,
but it was different, yeah.
It's on a different level, you know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, just comparatively, the lyrics on this album, like you said, a lot more repetition, more simple, versus Nevermind and Utero, where the writing style lyrically is more complex, and then the guitar soloing just like is like simple. It's like I don't know, you know, what different hands were used for this album versus you know, the next, but anyways.
Well, it says he was credited as a guitarist on the album Sleep, but he never actually performed on it.
Okay.
So you know, he probably had some input
parts,
right? Sure. He probably had some input, and I would, it almost seems like you know, Kurt was a little more focused on the guitar and the musicality over the lyrical content, you know, and that might also be where that level comes from.
And then on Nevermind, that kind of flipped.
Exactly.
It was more lyrical.
It was more based on the lyrics, and he probably put more energy into that and kept the guitars a little more simple, which kind of goes into that grunge. It made it more that grunge style compared to this. This almost sounds like the Ramones trying to do grunge. I mean, it sounds so punky that it's just on that line between punk and grunge.
It's not going to get any better than that reference. The Ramones trying to do grunge.
That's perfect.
That's exactly my feelings towards this album that I couldn't put into words, but that's it.
Right. So we've talked about Blue a little bit anyways. It's just a different feel to the album comparatively, especially to us, Josh and I, who haven't listened to it before in its entirety anyways. And so, great way to start. I think it starts off strong. Like I said, fat-ass bass line.
Yeah, that bass line is awesome. And Chris really fucking nails it, too. He is a way underrated bass player, and this Agreed. Album, this whole album really shows off his skills.
Yep, he shines on this for sure. Absolutely. So
how about that fill at the end of the song? That sounds like every like garage band trying to end the song.
Yep.
Right. Absolutely.
We've all done that.
Oh yeah.
Everyone. Everyone. But I think we can move on to Floyd the Barber anyways. So, I mean, you mentioned you did like a paper on this or like something to that effect.
It was an English report. And
why this song?
I don't, well, this was when I was really into this album. So I think it was about 11th grade. So it'd been like 2002, 2003, somewhere in there. But I loved this whole album, and it was something about Floyd the Barber that kind of struck me. When I started researching like what the song is, it turns out it's an interpretation of a dream he had.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember what the lyrics are and how it goes. But basically what my report was is that, in 11th grade, the only way I could pass English was Adderall. So I was probably got this on Adderall writing this too. it was a dream he had, and it was something along the lines of, you know, because he was fucked up on heroin when they were doing this. You know, they were touring, doing, you know, it was this really fucked up heroin dream he had of this barber like slicing open his neck, you know.
Sure.
I wish I still had that report someplace.
I mean, it's,
yeah,
it,
I don't,
yeah,
I don't know why it struck me, but it was just the way the story about this song was and how it just, I don't know.
It's like fucking Sweeney Todd, but
yeah, I was going to say
it was. Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is where I noticed like how much, heavier this album is, you know, comparatively.
Yeah.
But I did write that it sounds like a local band trying to like play Nirvana, like, but like heavier, you know, like, they're like, let's play like Nirvana, but let's down tune another little bit more, you know, let's down tune a couple steps, you know?
Yep.
But, I mean, it still has like a lot of groove. It's I mean, just the just how it just kind of hits on like the verses, you know,
those downbeats are fucking super cool.
It's so interesting, and I keep being like, man, I can't believe that this came out of the same band that did Nevermind, you know. And like
This is, well, it's only the second song, but on the chorus, you get a hint of like the Nirvana that everyone knows. Like it switches from a verse that always feels like it's about to go into like a metal breakdown type deal.
Yep.
And then the chorus is pretty much a Nirvana chorus, minus Dave Grohl doing something a little bit different on drums and not riding hard eighth notes on the cymbal or something. But the chorus reminds me quite a bit of what they would have written for Nevermind. Not lyrically, but the melody, I should say.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, overall, great track. It piqued my interest, you know, just with how heavy it seemed like they could get, you know, so.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, anything else on Floyd the Barber?
I want to say something before we get too far. I just want to let you guys know, as I'm sure that you already guessed, this isn't my favorite album I've ever listened to.
Yeah.
But it's, I don't want to say tolerable because that seems aggressive. I was okay with listening to it because I'm a huge fan of Kurt Cobain's, like, his voice. Like, just the tone of it.
Yeah.
And it sounds, like, Nevermind and In Utero are great. They're great albums. But the rawness that he has on this is almost more appealing to me than when it's polished and clean.
Sure.
It just, this album, like, we talked about Nevermind and how it sounds like it fucking hurts. This fucking album, though, this motherfucker hurt.
Yeah.
Well, he was, you know, again, you know, kind of like with lyrics, I don't think he was really concentrating on how he was delivering it vocally. Mm-hmm. You know, right. It was, you can almost kind of tell it's somewhat lazy. You know, he's not trying to polish it. He's just throwing it out there, his whatever natural voice he's got, you know.
Yeah, and he's like, get me to that fucking guitar solo at the end. Right, let's do that part.
Right, he was, you know, and it really seems to me that he was more concentrating on the musicality of his guitar playing and how the songs are going to work musically over lyrically and vocally, where everything after that, when they kind of set the gold standard of grunge at the time, he was more concentrated on how his delivery was and what he was delivering.
Yeah.
And I think that's why I like this album too, is because it's, you're not getting that, I don't want to say like eagle polish, you know, because at some point when you get big enough, when you're performing, that's kind of all you're doing to yourself, is you're polishing your own ego. To where it was, you know, that raw, it's that goes right back to that raw feeling and that raw sound. You know, a lot of the artists where their second album began, you know, pretty much is their big one, you know, Nirvana, Nevermind, like you guys had mentioned before, $3 Bill. I mean, that was, it was pretty raw compared to Significant Other.
Oh, yeah. Right.
You know, and there's countless bands out there that do the same thing. Lamb of God, their first album, they were named Burn the Priest, which they re-released, and that same thing, you're like, this is the same people that did Lamb of God, you know?
Right.
Meshuggah's first album, it was unbelievably, you couldn't tell it apart from like Metallica at the time, because, you know, this was the mid-80s, and Meshuggah sounded just like any other thrash metal band until they, you know, it was like their second or third album when they started getting with the weird time signatures and kind of getting their own pattern going.
I think even with all that said, it's almost like an interesting little study to like go back to your favorite band's like early shit and like see where it began, you know.
There's another one of my favorite. It's a good series for you guys to try out. First albums.
That's actually a really good idea.
First albums.
Very, very so good idea.
This could be your kickoff episode.
Fuck, man.
I love that. So that's Floyd the Barber. We move on to About a Girl.
It's probably the only song people would be familiar with.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes.
It's a great song.
It is.
It's a really good song.
Yep.
Yeah. I like this track a lot. It's too bad that Puddle of Mud had to like butcher this shit, dude. Have you seen Puddle of Mud acoustically perform About a Girl?
Oh, yes. I do remember this. It was fucking terrible.
Awful. So bad. It was
Everyone
so
needs
bad.
To watch that right now.
Oh, is the, yeah.
yeah.
Dude, he... The sing... Okay, like, God bless his heart, but the singer, like... No one said anything before? Like,
right?
Right? Like, you guys had to fucking practice this song. Your bandmates are mean.
He didn't have a cold or anything.
I thought he was fucked up on something.
Yeah. Just like, hey! Like, he's fucking, like, just can't hit any of the notes, dude. And he's just
it's
like,
so bad.
He looks like. Hit like his fucking jugular at any point is just gonna go pff, and like fucking his just blood.
He looked like he was shitting his pants for 3.5 minutes,
dude.
Yeah,
Puddle of Mud about a girl. If you want this song ruined, the only song that you know from this album, you need to go watch it. But
dude, and I actually like it. It was so bad that I feel bad for them because I don't like Puddle of Mud. Have I listened to Puddle of Mud in the past? Yeah. Do I like it? Not really. But
right. He's
even there better than that. You're better than that. What are you fucking doing?
Exactly. I don't like you as a band, like just personal preferences, taste and stuff like that. But I know you can do better.
Right.
Yeah, and if you can't, cut the fucking song.
Yeah.
I'm not over here trying to sing Celine Dion
right. Because
I'd sound like a fucking pig.
Right. Right. So it's like, you know, or even like down tune it a little to be in your range.
Yeah.
Like it
Half
doesn't.
Yeah.
Down.
Yeah.
You know, it's you clearly didn't think this one through.
Stay in your lane, dude.
what do you think the fucking audio engineers at Sirius were doing while this? Because I think it was Sirius XM. What do you think they were doing while they were playing this? Do you think they were just like, this guy fucking, is this a joke?
Yeah.
Are we supposed to cut?
Yeah,
they probably took their headphones off and put in earplugs.
Exactly.
No. I mean, if he wants to really, if they're going to do this, okay, but all right.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so bad.
But
Nirvana's, like, their
the original,
version,
yeah.
the original version is a fucking great song.
It is such a good song.
Great song. Love this song. And I think you said this before, but yeah, this seems like the Nevermind that we would get later, you know? And
Yep.
But it still has that raw sort of production value that's throughout Bleach. So honestly, I don't have much to say on this song other than like, this is the song you've heard from this album. And
yep.
And go watch Puddle of Mud Diz version.
Stop what you're doing and go watch Puddle of Mud.
Yeah.
But then go watch the Nirvana Unplugged so you can
cleanse
your mind of all
so
that shit.
So fucking good. Yeah. I made Casey watch some of that before I came up here to record this episode. It's so good.
I almost suggested we talk about that one, but I
would like to do an episode about that because it's visual too, and I like those episodes.
That's
so good.
Yeah,
we should do that.
Because their covers that they do on that are unbelievable. Like Lake of Fire. Oh my God. Anyway.
All right. That's about a girl. And then next we move on to School.
School. I love this song. I mean, it just pounds your, just gets your heart pumping. Like this is like a, almost like a workout song, you know?
Definitely.
And actually,
it's such go ahead. Sorry.
Fear Factory did a cover of this song.
Okay.
And it's badass. It was on the Archetype album.
Okay.
And it's not Nirvana doing it. It's Fear Factory, so it's totally metalized and Burton's vocals on it are really good. I mean,
sure.
If there's anybody that could do Kurt Cobain, it would be Burton C. Bell.
You
said
like this song, Josh.
Well, no, and it's not that. I actually do like the song. I love the riff and I love his vocals. But Lambo, you said Fear Factory.
Fear Factory,
And I don't know what that is, but I heard Fear Factor and I just had Joe Rogan in my brain.
Joe Rogan singing this.
Yeah, like what the fuck did Joe Rogan cover this song on Fear Factor? What do you mean?
Fear Factory's been around a lot longer than Joe Rogan has.
This track is so good. I mean, yeah. it is very much like just kind of a straight up like heavy rock jam sort of song.
It is, yep. But it's chaotic as shit, which yep. makes it like not a straight up rock song, if that makes sense. This is one of the ones where obviously like a metronome didn't fucking matter because they're all over the place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's not click friendly. Butch Vig would have been disappointed in this.
Right. And I think this song also has just another kind of like Waylon guitar solo that like just
yep.
again is like it's like where did this come from? You know? I don't you know, usually you just play those melodic riffs, you know, yep. and that's it. But no, I think that, I mean, it's just a straight up jam, dude. It's good.
It is. I like the song.
And the overall, you know, and it goes through most of the songs on this album, but the overall tone of his guitar just kills me. I love it so much. It's just so raw. I mean, there's even parts in songs where you can actually hear like the raw, you know, the feedback. They don't take that out.
Yeah.
It even, you know, it sounds like he's actually messing with the knobs while he's recording it, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it does. So it sure does.
It's just, you know, I'm so used to this, especially with the music that's made today, you know, even the stuff that's made to sound distorted and it sounds so digital and you can tell. I can tell. And it's just, it's clean and it's beautiful, and you know, even a distorted guitar in the digital world, you can hear every nuance of a note or a chord, you know, to where this, you can tell it's just a straight up microphone just pointed at this old shitty fucking amp, and he's messing with it, and he gets too close to it, and the thing just squeals off, and you can hear listening to some of these songs that, you know, even in, especially in school, where I think it starts off kind of like distorty and shit. The engineer that was doing it, he had to be cringing a couple of times because that distortion was just coming through so hard.
Oh, for sure.
But I think it fits in so well with everything else. They're like, you know, it needs to have that raw feel to stay coherent. And, for $600 and some, no one's going to go through and edit out every little thing or, you know, punch in and punch out every little time you do a little slip up, whatever. Yeah. So I think for what the budget they had and probably the limited, you know, gear that they had, that they were using, they got some killer results. I mean, it's fantastic music.
Yeah. It is cool. Like when, I mean, not to derail too much, but even when you've been in music for like a long time, or even like as drummers and stuff, like you can have a million cymbals, you can have Neil Peart's kit, you can have like the bajillion different little tonal, you know, cymbals and stuff like that. And yeah, sure, all those stuff are cool, and you've obviously built your kit to make a certain sound, but then there is something about just stripping everything back and just minimalizing everything and then trying to be creative in the minimal. And you can see that with, with this album, obviously, you know, it's $600 or whatever, you know, it's as minimal as they come. And I mean, you see that even with like video game music from like the SNES and NES days, where like these musical composers were like clearly listening to like 70s prog rock and they could only do like three notes at a time, you know? And then they were trying to input all that information into like this tiny cart that could barely even hold everything in it. And that's always interesting to me. And then you move on to like later video games or later music, and it's like, sure, they have a full orchestra, but does it ever sound as cool as that just minimalized trying to make a 70s prog rock album in a SNES cart? No, it never sounds cool as it can be because you minimalize it, you know?
Yep.
So,
yep.
But anyways, that's my video game tangent. Anyways, so we can move on to the next track if y'all want.
We digress.
Yes.
Love Buzz.
Love Buzz. I love this song, dude. I
do too.
Yeah.
And you know what it is? There's the, so the bass obviously is fucking got a cool groove, right?
Yeah.
But it reminded me of Come Out and Play by The Offspring, that has that like sort of Middle Eastern surf rock like sound in the verse. If you pull it up, it's like that. You know? And that's kind of the bass groove on this track that it reminded me of. And I mean, you all know I love that good bass. And this this has a great bass line to it. So probably one of my more favorite tracks off the album, which I know is weird to say because it's not like, it's not crazy or anything, but it's just got a great groove to it. So that's my thoughts.
It kind of reminds me of the Pixies. Sure. I don't really know why, though.
Well, according to Mr. Wikipedia here, it's a cover song.
What?
They didn't write this. It's a cover by a band called Shocking Blue, which was a Dutch rock band from the 60s and 70s.
Interesting. I did not know that.
That join up.
I just kind of realized it myself. I mean, the shit you learn on Wikipedia sometimes.
Right.
But yeah. But I still think, you know, overall, I think it fits the album really well. I don't know what the original sounds like. I'm sure it's probably actually a little more like the Pixies, being a Dutch rock band from the 60s and 70s.
Sure.
So I'm sure they just kind of grunged it up a little bit and, you know, punked it up, because it does kind of still have a little punk feel to it.
It does, yeah. And I like his little additives on the guitar. He has like, because the bass is pretty much just running with that boom for like the whole song.
Yeah, yeah.
And then he adds in like these little solo-y kind of parts that are like maybe an octave up from the bass, but it blends over it nicely. It was really cool. Also, his screaming on this song, fucking good stuff.
Yeah, I mean,
I like a good, or maybe not screaming, yelling, whatever he's doing. Yeah, it's really fun.
I think he's vocally he's second to none. I mean, nobody's got a style like his, you know. And, you know, he's in that realm of like Janis Joplin, of where their style is so their own, you just can't replicate it.
Yeah, right. I would agree with that. I think people have tried to replicate it, but yeah, nothing's really gonna.
Yeah, they end
be
up
be at that. Nothing's gonna be at that level.
They end up sounding like that dude from Puddle of Mud. He's about to blow his jugular out of his neck.
Everybody, go watch that Puddle of Mud video if you haven't yet.
And if you watched it earlier, watch it again.
Watch it again. Fucking pause this and go watch that.
But then we get to Paper Cuts.
Paper Cuts, yeah. This is a good tune.
This is,
it's it gave me like Rob Zombie, like creepy vibes.
Yep.
Which I liked. I enjoyed that.
This is I just kind of wrote that this is an ugly song. It's
very ugly.
But that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, it's just, I mean, you basically just have like this feedback, these chugging riffs, and just nailing on the toms, you know, during like the verses and stuff like that. And it doesn't really, you know, it kind of sticks to that for like a little while. And obviously they break it up with like, you know, other verses and stuff like that. But it's a little bit ugly, you know? It's just,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's got that feedback in between pauses, and it kind of, well, I shouldn't say it reminds me of it because this came well before it, but there's a lot of old, you remember Cursive, Nate?
Yeah.
They have some older albums where they do this like really off-brand kind of rock music where there's really no structure at all. It's just random notes and hits blended together, essentially.
Yeah.
And I feel like they kind of bit this style a little bit from Paper Cuts, so it sounded familiar to me. Is it Kurt Cobain singing on this whole album? Because there's a lot of parts where I'm like, that doesn't fucking sound like him.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he was the only vocalist.
He was, at least to me, it sounded like, it didn't sound like him at a lot of parts. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I don't know.
I don't have like a time stamp on the song or anything, but there's a bit in this right before he starts like screaming. He's doing like this weird, like low wobbly sounding voice. And it just doesn't sound like Kurt Cobain to me. So well, I was just curious.
I mean, he was on heroin, but not as much heroin as like Nevermind and In Utero.
Oh, you know? So it fucking, what did it level him out on Nevermind?
It could have been. I mean, you know, I find myself, my voice changes just depending on how I'm feeling at any point in time.
You know, even, I mean, to bring in, because we've talked about Knocked Loose before. The vocalist, and he even said this himself, he's like, I haven't been doing anything different, but like my vocals, like from the beginning of doing this band to like this last album they did or whatever, he said like my voice is like, it's almost like it's gotten deeper, like in my screams, which like, yeah, I'm sure if you're screaming like, you know, all the time, it's going to sound a little bit different from the beginning to the end. So I don't know, but yeah, no, I think it is all Kurt. So I don't know, though. You never know.
Right. And I think, yeah, I mean, who knows when he was recording these tracks, too. I mean, he could have been high as shit at one point and cut, you know, cut
sober
in
at
or,
another. Yeah.
Right. Or maybe he just woke up and he was tired. And, you know, again, I don't think he was too worried on his vocals at this point. You know, it wasn't part of his niche yet. It was just,
but you know what's frustrating as fuck about that, though, is you can tell that he's not really trying in a lot of parts, and it's so much better than most people will ever be.
Right.
You know what I mean? Good for him. Just natural talent just dripping off that dude.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Gone too soon.
Yes. I guess we can move on to Scoff.
Scoff.
Be our next one.
Wait, isn't it Negative Creep before that?
Oh, is Paper it? Cuts. Yeah, Paper Cuts, Negative Creep, then Scoff.
Yeah.
Oh. Whoops.
Yeah, Negative Creep is a cool fucking song. I like if there's any other songs besides Floyd or About a Girl, maybe School, this would be the other one that maybe somebody's heard.
That's true.
This one reminds me of, I might be way fucking off base, but what's the band that sings the Ace of Spades?
Motorhead.
Yeah, this gives me like a Motorhead vibe to it a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think it might be vocally, because he has this another different like inflection on his voice, and it's that
That's true. It's a little
fucking Motorheady, and it's just fucking running too. It's just four to the floor, just banging you in the face.
That's a good pull. Yeah, definitely. I didn't write that down, but now that you say it, yeah, definite Motorhead.
That's the first reference I've ever pulled that Nate was like, yeah, I think you might be right. Usually you're like, what are you fucking talking about?
You know, and maybe he's still playing with his vocal style too. Like nothing has
really kipped in.
And, you know, so, you know, like About a Girl, his vocal style is a lot like what you'd see later on.
Well, and so, yeah, and that song blew up off of this. So if you're trying to get a record deal, you go with what blows up. So that we're getting to the fucking bottom of this. Detective Lambo Nate, Josh.
You got it, baby.
We'll start a PI firm.
Great track, though. I can't be sure. I feel like this was on like a Guitar Hero or like a rock band or something.
I think it was too, because I remember hearing it someplace other than this album, but I cannot for the life of me remember where.
Same. You know, and that's
it could have been
like,
in a movie, it could have been a game. Yeah. It might have been Rock Band or Guitar Hero, because I play Guitar Hero a lot less than Rock Band, but.
Sure. But yeah, it is another track that it's like, I know this one, you know, but I don't know. Maybe it was Motorhead I was thinking of. Josh.
Yeah, you definitely get some of that.
Good track, though.
Next up, Scoff.
Now we're on to Scoff, right?
I just can't get rid of that lyric. I'm a negative creep and I'm stoned. I love that. I love that line.
It is great.
Scoff.
Yeah. Let's
see. Double pedals, not Dave Grohl.
Right. No, yeah, and I got to give props to the drummer, man, because, I mean, it's definitely not Dave Grohl, but he is really fucking good. And
we talked about Dave Grohl, though, and he's not, this drummer, forgive me, I don't know his name. What's his name again?
I just had it. Chad, well, let's see.
Chad
Channing. Chad Channing, but there was also a couple of songs, let's see, yeah, Floyd the Barber, Paper Cuts, and Downer, which is towards the end, actually was drummed by Dale Krober.
Okay.
But then, yeah, I guess things didn't work out, because I think, I want to say maybe those three were like a demo that they had made.
Okay.
And then,
sure.
Which kind of got them the recording deal with Sub Pop to actually do this album. And then, right. I don't know, there's no real story that I can find on what happened to Dale. But then, yeah, it was the other guy. I forgot his
name.
Chad, yeah. Too many Chad.
I love the, give me back my alcohol. I love that little part of the song. It's so good.
I mean, that's most of the song.
Yeah, that is the song. Heal a million, kill a million, peel a million, feel a million, give me back my alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure where he was going with, you know, and if you start trying to look into the meaning of any of these lyrics, you're just like, what the fuck was he thinking? And you're like, oh yeah, he was on heroin.
Yeah, I feel like if you try to figure it out, you're just going to lose your fucking mind. And I just doubt that it was any of these songs were really about anything.
No.
That's what it feels like.
No, right. Not really. I mean,
I tried, and that was like, I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think about a girl and negative creep kind of go together, because like, it was, I think it kind of has something to do with feeling like he was creepy because he was attracted to this girl that was probably too young. But then, yeah, like Floyd the Barber, that was a fucking weird ass dream, you know, and right. he even talks about, he was in, what's that? Mayberry, the city with Andy Griffith show. Cause like some of the lyrics actually name the characters of Andy Griffith's show. Yeah.
Interesting.
So, and it was just like this weird dream he had. So I can only imagine that had to be heroin induced, just kind of mania type shit. I don't know. I've never done heroin, so I don't know what kind of shit it makes you do.
Yeah, but not much else, I guess, on Scoff. It's just kind of like it is just like a fever dream of a song where it's just distortion and get back my alcohol, you know, and it's whatever. But
well, again, his lyrical style just comes out because he's got that, you know, he's just screaming, give back my alcohol. You know, the way he does it is really fucking good. Like, it just sticks with you. You're like, all right, I'll let you do that a bunch more times than you need to. Because it fits in the song pretty good.
It does. It definitely does.
It does, yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that.
Swap meat?
Swap meat.
Swap meat.
Swap meat. Spelling of the song is the first thing I wrote down. The exit to the chorus with like the snare roll and the riff that's happening, it's kind of like mid-ish chorus, I guess I should clarify. I like that a lot. It's very simplistic riff, and he's just kind of doing like one note at a time, and there's just this nice little snare roll happening, but it keeps it simplistic, and again, it's just like, it's Nevermind but down tuned, you know, and a little bit heavier. So,
yeah, I like the chorus as well. That little snare breakup, like you're talking about, is cool. The verses, I don't know. It's just something about them aren't my favorite, I guess.
Sure.
I think it's just because this might be melody. it's every line has the same melody and it doesn't change at all. And then you get to the chorus and it's spicy as shit. Musically, the verse is good, but the vocal melody, I think that this is one of the songs where I noticed that maybe the tiniest bit lazy on it, like not really giving a fuck how how his performance is coming across.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty fucking straightforward verse, so it needed something in it for me to be more interested. But the chorus is banging on this one.
Yeah. Yeah, unless there's anything else, I suppose we can just move on to Mr. Mustache.
Mr. Mustache. What a great song name. What a fantastic song name.
Yeah, right. I think I'm going to name my next motorcycle that.
Mr. Mustache.
And then I'm
sounds like a...
I'm going to 3D print a mustache that'll go underneath the headlight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It sounds like a fucking children's book.
Yeah.
Or like a series.
Hello, Mr. Mustache.
Hello, children. It's Mr. Mustache.
Or...
Did everybody have a good weekend?
Yeah, it's that creepy gym teacher that looks at you funny.
Yeah.
And he's got nothing but that 70s porn stash going on.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we've all had those. Josh, get back to the kickball game.
Besides creepy gym teachers, though, I mean, I actually like this song a lot. I mean, it's just...
Did you guys read through the lyrics?
No.
No.
Oh, let me read you a couple. As I eat cow, I am not proud. Easy in an easy chair. Poop as hard as rock. I don't like you anyway. What the fuck? What the fuck's going on in this song?
I like that.
It is so all over the fucking place.
Heroin?
Yeah, dude. Oh,
I mean,
gosh.
That's kind of the only answer you need for, like, lyrics on this album.
Right.
But you know, I'll say it over and over. It's his mind was not on lyrics or even vocals at any point. He was so focused on the musicality of the band overall. You know, that's, I think,
I think the other song where it was like very repetitive, I think it was back at the school or whatever, I think.
Yep.
That was the other one that was just like not much for lyrics and it was very repetitive, I think. If I remember, I think I forgot
much,
to write it down.
Pretty much but, most of them are like that. But yeah, there's a couple that are like ridiculously short for, you know, three, 4 minute song.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, but definitely this is more music focused, you can tell. So.
Yeah, I love the riff on this song. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do. It's like a surf rock riff, but like punked up.
Yeah, so good.
You know what I mean?
I love it.
It's really good.
Great track, Mr. Mustache. Thank you.
Mr. Mustache.
We can move on, though, to Sifting. Song's a little bit too long.
Yeah, it's the longest one on the album. Five and a half minutes.
And just kind of reflecting back on the album, too, I just kind of felt that anything that was, like, over the, like, 3 minute 30, 3 minute 40 mark on this album got a little long, just like listening through a couple times. You know, it's like, because as interesting as they get you in the first, like, verse chorus or whatever, they never really switch it up too much, like, to where, like, they'll do a crazy bridge that's, like, very derivative of what they've done up to this point. So I feel like any song that goes over, like, the 3 minute 30 mark or so, you're already like, okay, I've seen what you can do, you know? So, again, not necessarily a bad thing. It is what it is. But this song is too long. So...
I would agree with that. It is a little on the long side for the content of it, I suppose.
Yeah.
It didn't warrant 5 minutes.
No, definitely not.
It's an interesting choice for what, for me, turned out to be an ending song.
Right. Yeah.
And I think that's why they added the other two tracks. A little bit later, it was pretty much just a standard. I think only like the original release, and later on, it was just bonus tracks, whatever. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't call it a good ending song, for, you know, but at the same time, this is their first studio album that they paid $600 some to record. So,
right.
Yeah. I think it could have been a good ending song if it was shorter, because that "Don't Have Nothing for You" bit is catchy as shit.
Yeah.
But you do that for 3 minutes and it's a little excessive.
Yeah. Well, I think they were just trying to fill a time gap. You know, they're trying, they had a so much allotted space that they could use, because it's definitely not like digital now.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
so
you gotta fill that tape reel.
Right. There's, you know, right. We got this much time. And I think even on some of the longer songs, again, they were so focused on the musicality that they weren't so worried about the depth of music or lyrics. It was, let's just play this many times. You know, we're not bored of it, so I guess it just sounds fine.
Right.
Yeah, I highly doubt these are the kind of guys who would write down on like a whiteboard, here's our intro and then verse and then, you know, chorus,
sure, no.
And then back to, you know, I don't think they're writing in that type of style. It's just
definitely not,
you know, what feels right, what feels good. And that's why their tempos are kind of all over the place too.
Yeah.
You know, it's just 100% going by feeling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my guess is at the time they're like, all right, well, we got about 6 minutes left. Can you do about a 6 minute song? You know, they're like, oh, I
you
think we,
get
can,
your money's
we can fill
worth.
It up. Yeah, we'll fill it up. So,
yeah,
that could have been. I mean, they did record, I think they recorded a couple other songs that didn't make it on the album.
Sure.
Or they were working on ones. I'm not sure how that story went, but I know there was at least one song that got cut from the final release of the album.
Okay. Okay. This is.
But yeah,
this song,
it's still a good tune. It still flows and fits with the entire album.
Does, yeah.
Definitely. It just, yeah, it kind of just drones on a little bit too long. Yeah, but.
Yeah,
I would agree.
But that's about it for Bleach. There's two bonus tracks that are, I think, kind of considered a part of the whole package now, which I listened to The Big Cheese and Downer. Which Downer, I think, is a good way to end the album.
Yeah.
But so Big Cheese is kind of another, like, this song to me is kind of like, okay, I've heard this so far in the album. You know, it's not anything new. It's not anything crazy. It's still good riffs, still chunky, still jammy, but I and that's kind of mostly what I'd have to say about that track. But then I think Downer really like amps it up. It's like a minute 40 and it's just fast punk, and I think it ends the album well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm listening to it currently.
Yeah.
And yeah, this is the Ramones. This is kind of the Ramones.
This is the Ramones part, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
So, yeah, like I said, I mean, this whole album is basically, it's just like the Ramones doing grunge. You know, it still has some of that grunge feel to it, but it just comes off really like punk.
Yeah.
You know, it's played a lot like a punk band would play.
Right.
Well, in total, unless you guys had anything else on the album?
No, that's it.
So in total, yeah. Lambo, I probably won't listen to this album again. It's just a little too intense for me. I will listen to it like About a Girl. That song fucking rocks. I am glad that I listened to it. It is really fun to, because like Nevermind and In Utero are they're staples of music in general now.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Like just as a whole. It's fun to go back and listen to something that big of a presence made before they were that big of a presence, to kind of see like what led them to that. This is the same. It was kind of the same feeling that I got listening to, it's not the same style of music, but listening to like Swimming in Circles by Mac Miller, and then going back and listening to like his first couple albums. It's like you can hear little hints of what it was going to be, but it just wasn't there yet.
Yep.
Not to say that Nevermind is necessarily a better album than Bleach. They're two completely different fucking bands at this point. But it's cool that you get those little hints of what it was going to turn into and how big it was going to get.
Yep.
So I appreciated it.
Absolutely.
Good. Yeah. Well, I kind of thought, if anything, you'd find it interesting and you would like the experience. Because, I personally really like these albums that were, you know, the first album release, or, you know, even demo releases by bands that ended up becoming pretty big. Because you can hear just that raw, just the rawness of it. You know, it takes me back of literally recording in a garage, you know, with friends and, you know, starting my musical career and engineering career. And learning that recording process. And, you know, I pretty much worked digital my whole life, but I was introduced into some of the analog stuff when I was going to school for it, you know, and they had just built a brand new digital studio. So their big focus was on what's up and coming and not so much on the old shit. But watching, and, you know, there's a documentary on, Muscle Shoals studio that was unbelievable, and you get a good insight of a lot of that old 60s, 70s, 80s, you know, blues and rock that came out of there. And it was just like unbelievable creativity you had to have to make it work back then. I mean, some of those, you know, a lot of those guys, they only had four tracks, or, you know, at the most eight tracks to work with. So they were bouncing tracks back and forth, and, you know, listening to some of these where they still split up the left and right sides, because that was an extra, you know, because that's all you had. You had two tracks, you had left and right for a stereo track. And so you'd hear, like, you know, certain parts on coming out of the right side and certain parts coming out of the left. And it's freaking amazing, you know, what they had to figure out with what they had. And we take everything that we have now for granted. I mean,
oh, for sure.
We have a computer that can literally hold thousands of audio tracks at once. And we just click and paste and move shit around and make it perfect. And we, you know, we have a grid that tells us where our tempo is. We don't need a metronome to tell us anymore. And even if you fuck it up, you're like, oh, let's quantize
it. Just fix it.
And boom, it just fixes itself. You don't even have to play it right. The computer does it for you.
I'm going to edit all three of our audio files in like 45 minutes for this session. And there's going to be probably 200 different little cuts in it. Could you imagine having to do 200 cuts on fucking tape?
Yep.
Trying to get it to line up.
Well,
you'd want to jump off a bridge.
Even worse, if we wanted to do anything remotely like we are now, we'd each have to have a reel-to-reel machine, the means of recording, and then we'd send it to one person who stitches all these together into another two-track channel, you know. It's just
you send someone a fucking telegram with a change to the drum part.
Yeah, we take this technology for granted so much, and it's I think some of the music that was made in the old school way was so much more creative, and even the unbelievable creative possibilities that are out there today. You know, you can have anything you want, any sound you want, and at the touch of your finger. And one of my favorites was the Dark Side of the Moon documentary. Have you guys ever seen that?
No, but I mean, I can imagine.
Yeah, they talked to you know, the engineer, the main engineer there, Alan Parsons. You guys heard of the Alan Parsons project? He was the engineer on Dark Side of the Moon. And, you know, he goes in there kind of like what you guys are talking about on the Nirvana thing, where, you know, he's got his whole digital board with all the original tracks on there. And so he's pulling down certain things, and all you hear is one part. And they actually showed pictures and maybe even video how they made, I think it was the loop for the Time song.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And because they didn't have digital shit back then, you couldn't just come up with a loop like that.
Yeah.
And the loop itself they made was too long to just fit on a regular reel and play over and over again. So mm-hmm. they actually had it spread out through the tape player, and it was wound around a mic stand. So it would, because the tape was too long. So, like a little tripod, it worked out perfectly, and all the clocks and stuff on the beginning of Time, that's all analog. They actually had a room full of clocks that they set the times on to chime the way they did, it's just
what
amazing.
A fucking project.
Yeah. I mean, so hearing stuff like Bleach and, Nevermind was recorded digitally, I don't believe.
I don't think so. But, no, I think that was analog.
But the studio production that went into it was so much greater than what was even available, in 1989 when they were recording Bleach. Was the end of 88, the beginning of 89. You can just hear that rawness to it. And
yep.
I think I appreciate that a little bit more than some of like this clean, sparkly stuff that we listen to on Apple or iTunes or whatever today.
So that's Bleach by Nirvana. That was Bad Bandmates and Lambo Is Here. Josh, what do you got to say? And then we or Lambo, do you want to plug anything?
Yeah, let's do that. I don't have anything good to say.
Plugs. Well, I'm only on Instagram now, but I started a couple pages for my motorcycle stuff. I just share a lot of photos. It's ADVMNMN, Adventure Moto, Northern Minnesota.
Perfect.
I bought a motorcycle this spring, and I've just been riding that thing like crazy. Put on about 4,000 miles now.
Jesus.
Probably, well, most of it's on road, but the bike's made to go off road too. So I've been doing trails and trying to find some new spots. I've got some ideas for doing, like maybe a small company. I'm going to do some training and stuff next year and probably become a motorcycle trainer.
Ooh.
Or at least that might be one of my next steps. Because I've ridden motorcycles and stuff most of my life. I just forgot how much I actually love it.
And, sure.
And then I've also been doing 3D. I think you guys know I've been doing some 3D printing in the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. I started an Instagram page for that. And I also have an Etsy shop where I can do customized 3D prints. I got a couple things on there now. Some lithophanes, which is a 3D printed picture. When you shine light through it, you can just see the image. It's pretty neat. So I got a few of those on up for sale. And pretty much right now everything's custom. So, send me a picture and I can print it for you. And I got one set up as like a nightlight. It's kind of neat.
Nice.
You should send me one of your new little baby and I'll make a nightlight for you, Nate.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And, so that's, AL 3D printing. I got just Instagram and an Etsy shop right now. It's pretty easy to find.
Perfect.
Other than that, it's work and play and listen to you guys. I like listening to you guys' show.
Thank you.
We appreciate that.
And if you haven't listened to our previous episode with episodes, actually, I think
episodes.
We did two.
Yeah, it was two. Yep.
That was
three,
a ton of fun. I think we did two. This will be our third.
Yeah, this is the third. Yeah, we talked about Pussifer.
Yes.
And Lamb of God, wasn't it?
Did we ever do this?
This is our fourth. We had a Lambo episode, Lamb of God, Pussifer, and now this.
Well, I suggested you guys listen to the new Lamb of God.
Yeah, he suggested
on that,
it.
So. Oh, you weren't on it?
Yeah.
Well, fucking oops.
But I'm still glad you guys listened to it. stuff. I still love that album. And
it's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did I like it?
No, you didn't.
Not really. But I knew you weren't going to like it. So right. I kind of do that to you on purpose, if you haven't noticed that. I like to torture you because you like Taylor Swift. So
right.
You guys are always fucking with me.
That's right. So, but listen to those episodes. I think they were a lot of fun. Lambo talks about how he hated doing sound for us for years. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, I love you guys.
And yeah, I mean, check out his Instagrams and his shops and give this man some business, you know? But that's about it. I don't know. Josh, what do you got to say?
Don't.
Don't? What does that mean?
I don't know.
Okay.
Kind of. Well, one of my favorite podcasts called Is We Dumb has a saying, just don't. Kind of opposite of what Nike does. So you can just leave it at that. Just don't.
Perfect. Just don't.
Fair enough.
That's about it. Okay, thanks. Bye to the episode.